Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Thursday, March 5th. Maybe while the country debates Medicare for all, we should at least have Medicare for all who have the coronavirus. We'll start today on the financial implications of getting coronavirus and what the government is doing and could be doing to make sure everyone who should get tested doesn't avoid any of that because they can't afford it. That would add to the risk of spread, obviously. And of course, the financial implications for people who need to be quarantined or treated could be huge. With me is Elizabeth Benjamin, Vice President for Health Initiatives at the Community Service Society of New York, which focuses on public policy that affects lower-income people. Hi, Elizabeth. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me on, Brian.
Before the show, I Googled Trump, coronavirus, Medicare for all. And the first two things that came up were a Business Insider headline from 2 days ago that said, Trump administration says it might not cover all coronavirus health care. And then a Wall Street Journal headline from yesterday that says U.S. weighs paying hospitals for treating uninsured coronavirus patients. So to start out, what can you tell us about the federal government's role as of right now in guaranteeing coverage for coronavirus patients?
Well, shockingly pathetic, I guess, would be the characterization. Congress just passed first of all, the Trump administration has no plans to cover treatment, and all they're doing is eagerly meeting with the pharmaceutical industry to develop a vaccine that they are, and from the Trump administration's perspective, that vaccine, they could charge whatever they want for it. So what I would say the Trump administration should be doing, and if I was president, is I would say, oh my gosh, let's do a federal Manhattan Project and develop a vaccine that the government owns. You can pay the companies, the private sector, a lot of money to develop it. But once it's developed on a very short term time frame, I mean, Trump is lying when he says it can be developed in 4 months. I mean, Dr. Fauci.
Well, that's the first thing to say about a vaccine. Yeah. We probably shouldn't even be talking about that so early in the segment because that'll get people thinking, well, there's a vaccine around the corner. How am I going to afford that? But that's months or a year or more.
Well,
away.
Dr. Fauci, who's the biggest expert around, says it's a year out, which is so why I would be focusing a lot of that money on vaccine development and government ownership, or at least the requirement to have reasonable pricing of that vaccine. The Republicans in Congress already kind of pulled back that language. The Democrats were trying to propose that. So that's a big concern, and I encourage listeners to really follow that carefully. In terms of treatment, we had really hoped that, you know, our elected members would be mindful of the fact that, you know, people are scared to get lab tests. There can be $50 copays for many people when they go to get lab tests. And there's just nothing that I can see that really guarantees the cost of getting screened, getting a lab test, and getting treated. And what was missing from that package, the $8.3 billion, is we have a program for low-income people that are uninsured. It's called the Federal Medicaid Program. It has a component called emergency Medicaid, which can be used by people who are legally here, lawfully here, and people who are unauthorized, or what some people refer to as undocumented. Mm-hmm. If I was Dr. Azar, the head of Health and Human Services, I would say federal Medicaid, emergency Medicaid covers all coronavirus testing and treatment. 37 states have already expanded Medicaid. Even red states have expanded Medicaid. There's still 14 laggards.
Enough to have that emergency Medicaid provision that you just described.
Right, and we could do this. So there's vehicles to do this. We don't have to set up a program that would happen, you know, in 5 years. We have the vehicle. We have the infrastructure right now. So that's something that we can really see. We should be seeing on the federal level that isn't happening. Just the other thing that's really important is paid sick days. You know, this is something, again, we should have seen federal leadership on. I mean, most health workers, I think at least half of all health workers only make $15 an hour, right? They need to come into work. We don't want them to come into work if they're sick, right? And they're the first to get sick because they're treating people who are sick, right? So if I was, again, president or, a federal actor, I would say we're going to have emergency paid sick days for anybody who has coronavirus that covers the 14 days.
So Congress passed an $8 billion emergency spending bill yesterday for coronavirus needs. Is it clear to you if any of that is designated to cover out-of-pocket costs for patients?
Absolutely not clear. And that's the problem. It seems to be just a giant spending measure, rightfully a big tranche to go to vaccine development, although we're a little worried about who's going to own that vaccines and how expensive they will be. Rightfully for, you know, public health authorities to do whatever they need to do to execute quarantines, rightfully for lab testing and emergency stockpiles. But the money that's actually going to states and hospitals, it's just money going there that I can tell you there is nothing in that bill that says a hospital who gets this federal money can't then later pursue you for payment. So that's wrong. We really need to have built into this federal legislation, or at least if the money comes to the states, built into state legislation to say that any of this $8.3 billion that's spent on consumers' care should be done free of charge. Or, you know, if they're uninsured. So if the insurance companies can pay for it, fine. But no one who's in a $4,000 deductible plan is going to want to go and get a lab test unless you're in New York and you know that will be free. But we need to incentivize people to go in and get tested, to go in and get treatment. The only way you can incentivize people to do that is to say, if you don't have coverage, you can still come, we'll cover the costs. And that kind of reassurance is not happening. And that's an absence of federal and local leadership.
So this goes back to the Wall Street Journal headline that I mentioned at the top from earlier this week, U.S. weighs paying hospitals for treating uninsured coronavirus patients. Are you saying that now has passed as part of that $8 billion congressional bill?
No, there is nothing as far as I can tell. They may be weighing it, but it doesn't. It seems like they're sending the money down unrestricted, which means the hospitals can get the money. The hospitals, Greater New York Hospital Association, has a whole letter asking for how they want all this money, but they haven't said, and when we get this money, we will treat people for free if they're uninsured.
That's what I thought. I thought maybe you were ahead of me on this,
no.
Which you would be in your position. And the first paragraph of that article says the Trump administration is considering using a national disaster program to pay hospitals and doctors for their care of uninsured people infected with the new coronavirus as concerns rise over costs of treating some of the 27 million Americans without health coverage. And so could the president wave his hand and declare a national disaster and do that?
That's what he should do. It should be, we've done this. We have this, it's in the playbook. It's in the 911 Ground Zero playbook. The Ground Zero happens. The whole Medicaid system server was based at Ground Zero. We had no way to enroll people in Medicaid. We just did paper Medicaid applications. It was called Disaster Relief Medicaid. We know how to get patients free care. We've done it. New York's done it. We do it for the 911 workers, the guys that were on the pile. They have their health care costs paid for their lifetimes. We need to have a same disaster, coronavirus disaster health care program, disaster health insurance program. And that is what needs to happen. And it'd be great if the Trump administration does that. If they're thinking about it, they should do it.
Here's a question via Twitter from a listener. Those of us on New York State of Health plans, those are certain plans in New York State, have deductibles between $1,700 and $4,000, and we would have to pay for coronavirus. Or, Elizabeth, is that exactly what Governor Cuomo just waived?
What Governor Cuomo just waived, and those New York State of Health, which are the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, marketplace plans, Governor Cuomo just said, if you want to get testing, you can go testing free of charge. So those folks with those giant deductibles, and that person is absolutely right, that's a very large deductible, should be able to go get tested free of charge. They will have no copays. What the governor didn't do, and I wish he had done, but maybe he doesn't have the authority to do, is to say also the treatment for coronavirus will not be subject to copays and deductibles. And for that fine day, I think we'll have to wait for Medicare for All. I think the coronavirus is a good example of why states or the federal government may really want to consider moving eventually to a national health insurance plan or a Medicare for All, so that we don't have to worry about this, because this is just the first pandemic. There'll be more, right? That's the world we're in now.
Here's Elena, who says she's a physician, calling from Dunedin, Florida. Hello from New York, Elena. Thank you for calling in.
Hello. So my concern is, I had just read a fabulous report from the World Health Organization experts who went to China and saw what they were doing there, which we do not have any of the infrastructure in place to do. We're telling people to go to their doctors, go to health centers, hospitals, clinics, to get tested, that puts so many more people at risk and spreads the epidemic. So if you, and we don't even have the 1.6 million test kits that they're making per week in China. They totally, in this report, which everyone should read, it talks about what they did so effectively to contain this, which we are in no way ready to do here. So I'm wondering about that. We need a, you're absolutely right, we need a Manhattan Project, not just for the vaccine, but for the testing, to keep people at home.
But doctor, are you suggesting that people, if there are enough tests, hopefully when there are enough testing kits, that people could be taking this test at home rather than go to a medical facility where they could infect healthcare workers?
Absolutely. If we had the army of people, unfortunately, that the dictatorship of China has, if we had an army of healthcare workers who could be trained to do testing and just do the collections and go around door to people's homes if they were suspected of having any contacts, they traced every contact of every case in China, like 265,000 contacts. We don't have this even in our minds here. This one case in New Rochelle, how many people it generated have to test?
And they're already, well, what if you're following the New Rochelle case, why would you say that we're not doing it? Because what I hear from government officials, tell me if you think they're spinning, is that they are doing aggressive contact tracing flowing from that person.
Very possible with that one case. Imagine multiplying that by how many this could be.
I know.
And where are you going to have the resources for that? And on top of that, why are they being told to go places to be tested?
Elena, thank you so much for your call.
I just want to say that I agree with the listener, the caller. This is the, you know, coronavirus, this is why government is good. This is why we want government, and we want effective government infrastructure to be able to handle disasters, to handle crises. I think one of the things that's a little scary about our current federal administration is that they don't believe in government. They don't believe in the power and the authority of government to step up when in crisis. And we really need that level of leadership throughout the country. I mean, I do laud Governor Cuomo for doing everything he can. I do laud, you know, Mayor de Blasio for getting out there and saying, look, our public hospitals are open for business. Please come in. You know, I think your caller has a good point. Like, do we really want everybody running around? But at this point, we don't have the army of folks that can go door to door and do door knocking and testing. But I do think that, you know, we do live in a democracy. Government is good. We need to empower and strengthen government and government systems to handle these kind of public health crises. And we need a national health insurance program or really robust state insurance programs or a really robust Affordable Care Act that can cover so that people are encouraged to get the care and to get the screening that they need without concern of, you know, their pocketbook. And we really need a good paid sick leave program.
Sarah in San Francisco, you're on WNYC. Sarah, thank you for calling in.
Hi, Brian. We love your show. We listen to you every morning.
Thank you so much.
So, you know, we're listening, and of course, I just woke up this morning and read that there's a cruise ship docked outside of San Francisco's seaport with potential cases, and I know that this is a big deal, but I also know that there have been diseases around for hundreds of years, which set people back thousands and millions, hundreds and thousands of dollars in their own bank account to get treatment. So I guess my question is, at what point does a disease become so big that the government says all of the precautions that we wanted to take, like we're taking now for the coronavirus, we actually are not going to do it? And how, I mean, my real comment is how unfair this is for all the people that are facing such severe diseases that are likely to very much kill them, like cancer, and they die with, you know, thousands of dollars of debt.
I'm so glad you asked this question, because I was thinking about this last night, too. You know, Medicare for All, Elizabeth, which I think is one of your causes, polled very well among Democratic voters on Super Tuesday, as it did in the earlier states. A majority of Democratic primary voters favor replacing all private insurance with a single-payer system. The problem for Bernie Sanders was that too many people who hold that view voted for Joe Biden, but that's another segment. But do you think coronavirus could add fuel to that debate across the country? Because as Sarah in San Francisco points out, it's such a stark example of the randomness of being potentially bankrupted by getting sick from any disease.
Yeah, I mean, look, my organization supports Medicare for all. We also support anything, we support Medicare for those who want it. I mean, we would support any measure that makes our healthcare system work better. Right now, it's unacceptable that hospitals are, who are mostly nonprofit are able to sue patients for unpaid bills. You know, we've done an analysis where 97% of the patients, of the over 30,000 patients we've identified in New York who are being sued by our not-for-profit hospitals are representing themselves. The reason why they can't pay their bills, they can't afford a lawyer. They can't afford to go to court. And so it's insane for all this huge multi-billion-dollar investment we make in our healthcare system that we don't have a vehicle for giving people healthcare for free or low cost or on a discounted sliding fee scale basis. And so it's got to change. Consumers have had enough. You know, we did a survey of New Yorkers, and of course, this is just New Yorkers, but 53% of all New Yorkers had a healthcare affordability burden in the past year. That's not okay. People are, 45% were like passing up on getting care because they were afraid of costs. That's not okay. The system has got to change. There are so many ways to possibly change it. One of it's Medicare for all. One of it's covering all undocumented immigrants or anybody regardless of immigration status. Another is having every state that hasn't expanded Medicaid, expand Medicaid, those 14 lagger states. But there's also just making the Affordable Care Act insurance better. It needs to be pushed up, as even Joe Biden is proposing, is pushing up the what we call an actuarial value, the actual quality of insurance, up to a gold or platinum product. One of the things that was a problem with the Affordable Care Act is, you know, in those days when Congress passed a bill, you had to be able to pay for it. It was called PAYGO. That doesn't seem to apply in the current Republican Congress, but it did apply for their tax cuts, but it did apply for the Affordable Care Act. And so they kind of dumbed down insurance. And so insurance, you know, only the sort of standard insurance product only covered 70%, and you had to pay the other 30% of your medical costs. That's too much. And people can't stand it. And so that's why there's so much frustration around the country, why people want Medicare for all. So we have to make insurance better. Medicare for all is an excellent option, but there's many, many other options we can do until we get to that fine day.
We're talking about government benefits being increased to cover the costs for people who have to get tested or treated for coronavirus. Maybe the reason they're not doing it is because there's going to be pushback. So there's another tweet that says, listening to Brian Lehrer guests talk about how communism is better equipped to handle coronavirus. Duh. So you know what I mean? I don't know if there's, even with this, going to be political opposition to doing the kinds of things you're advocating for the president and Congress to do.
Well, I don't think it was, I think it was the caller who said that China was impressive in what they were doing, but I think the caller also acknowledged that it was, I think she called it a dictatorship. And I think my point was, is this is why we want government, and government is good, and we need government for disasters. We need government for public health crises. The capitalist system, or you know, the free market system, I guess is a more appropriate term, just really can't handle mass pandemics. You know, there's just no evidence where it has worked. And we do have evidence where government does work in mass disasters. For example, when we had 911 here in New York mm-hmm. City, where we had disaster relief Medicaid and where we had everybody able to get health insurance coverage for their, you know, healthcare conditions without fear.
And I guess another question for an open society like us, like ours, a much more open society than China is in many ways, will be if it does become widespread and the request for quarantine or even the order for quarantine becomes massive like it did in Wuhan, are people even going to comply?
Right.
Elizabeth Benjamin, Vice President of Health Initiatives at the Community Service Society of New York and co-founder of Healthcare for All New York. Thank you so much. And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255, 844-745-TALK. See you tomorrow.